This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. Cervical Cancer Awareness Month is January. We did a show with Prof. Jamia and Dr. George Lee in the first Friday of January on cervical awareness. And the emphasis then was about the HPV vaccine and how, you know, cervical cancer is actually caused by a virus and how we've made breakthroughs with this vaccine and how it has helped us tremendously. Earlier this month, we did that show. And as a follow-up to that discussion, we are talking about the impact of this disease. And with us sharing her story is Genevieve Somdi, a cervical cancer survivor, as well as Dr. Soundari Somasundaram, president of the National Cancer Society. Welcome to the show, ladies. How are you today?
Good, thanks.
Very well, thank you.
And welcome back, Genevieve. I mean, we had you on many years ago.
Yes,
it's been a long, long time ago. Do you want to just dive into it? Just tell us your story. I mean, how did you find out you had cervical cancer? How old were you? How long since, you know, have you been cancer-free?
It was coming up to about 6 years ago. And I went for my pap smears every year. My father's a gynecologist, my mother's a nurse, and they had a nursing home, so I was always had to go for my pap smears. I just had my son, and I'd gone for my annual pap smear, and my dad called me, and he said, results aren't good. He said, you're going to have to come in, and you're going to have to go and see a gynae oncologist for further tests. So I went in for that, and again, the test came back not very good, and I was told I needed a cone biopsy, which is where a cone shape is cut from the cervix. So we were all in a bit of shock and everything, and went in for the cone biopsy, and I'm cutting the story quite.
It's okay, take your time. I mean, we need the details. You just want to understand it, you know.
And 10 days later, when the results came back, the results were not good. So this is when they turned around and they said, you're probably going to need to have a hysterectomy. And this is when I realized that this is actually very serious. You know, I had cancer. I could die. So I was with my husband, and I was crying, and I was like, who's going to look after my babies? What are we going to do? They were really young. My son was a year at that time, and Isabella was four. And it took a long time to come to terms with the fact that I would need a hysterectomy. I was only 35. I felt very young to be losing my uterus. I wanted more kids. And I went through a couple of stages, which the doctor said was very normal to go through stages. So I tried bargaining with my doctor, and, oh, let me have a baby first. And he was just like, no, you've got to have a hysterectomy. It's just got to be done. And everybody around me knew what had to be done, but I had to get to that place. And it took about a month, and I suddenly realized, hang on a minute, I'm so lucky. I have a little boy, I have a little girl, I have a husband who loves me, a family who's there for me. So, you know, what am I thinking about? So we went in, and I had to have a routine ultrasound. And this is when they found the lump in the cervix. So they said, oh, well, now not only do you need a hysterectomy, you need a radical hysterectomy, where they take pretty much everything from that area. So I said, fine, okay, I'm going in anyway, so take it all out. So we went in, and it was very, very tough, because I actually didn't think I'd come out the other side. And the operation took about 6-7 hours, and I woke up to my little girl's face saying, hi, Mummy.
And at that time, you know, Dr. Soundari, we know that cervical cancer is a very aggressive type of cancer. Is that why Genevieve's doctor actually said, you need to take it out now?
Yes, but before that, though, I'd like to also say that, you know, Jen's story is not your typical story, because she did everything right. She did her pap smears, et cetera, every year, and they still found cancer at such a late stage, comparatively. So for some women, especially younger women, cervical cancer can just take even just a year to develop. But in most women, it takes 10 to 15 years to develop. So that's why Jen's case is so atypical in terms of the period of time it took. But in terms of her story and the journey she had, that's not atypical. You know, that unfortunately a lot of women go through. So, you know, back to what you asked in the sense that, you know, was that very aggressive? Yes, it was very aggressive. But in most instances, if you do your regular pap smears, you should be able to find it at a much earlier stage than what Jen did.
What stage was it at, Jen?
It turned out to be stage 2B cancer. Mm-hmm. But from what I understood, as you've got to remember that even though I come from a medical family, I knew nothing about cervical cancer at all.
Yeah.
So when you first are told your pap smear is abnormal, of it course. Does not mean that you have cancer.
Yep.
So you go through a couple of stages there, and then you get to stage 1 cancer. So mine had already gone all the way through that and was already at 2B cancer.
And when was the last time you did your pap smear? So all of this within a year?
All within a year.
Yeah. That's quite quick, isn't it?
It is. It is. And that's what I was saying. You know, less than 10% of women would have what Jen had. Mm-hmm. The majority of women would have gone through the stages that if you did your regular pap smear, you would find what we call dysplasia first, which means that the cells are changing. Because when you do a pap smear, what you're looking at are actually the cells of the cervix. And if a pap smear is done well, you get cells from what we call the transformation zone. That's where cancer most often occurs with cervical cancer. And when you look at those cells, you can see whether those cells are totally normal, and then you'll get back a pap smear result, which is normal, or whether you've got dysplastic changes, which means that the cells are changing slightly. And at this stage is when you can already do something. So before, it's what we call pre-cancer. You can actually do something to stop stop the cells changing further to become cancer. And by doing your regular pap smears, generally, that's when you find it. You find it at a precancerous stage. Unfortunately for Jen, it didn't happen that way. She was one of the, I wouldn't say lucky, but she was one of the few that you know, it aggressively morphed into cancer very quickly.
When we spoke to Prof. Jamia the other day, one of the things she spoke about is there's a lot of awareness, but women don't come forward to carry out pap smears. So there is a lot of fear as far as doing pap smears are concerned. How would you allay, you know, how would you convince ladies that it is okay to do a pap smear?
I think
and it's not as going to be as uncomfortable as you think it is.
Yeah, one is this. I don't think it's the matter of being uncomfortable to a certain extent. I think it goes beyond that. It goes to the point that you always believe that you're not going to be the one. Mm-hmm. That, yes, you can have awareness that, oh, people do get cancer, people do get cervical cancer, but it's not going to be me. And you have to get past that first, to actually pass that behavior that says that it's not going to be me, so that you can be proactive enough to actually go and do the test. And then, yes, I do agree. You know, even as a medical doctor, even as someone who goes and does pap smears regularly, the idea of having to open your legs up in bare all to not so much a total stranger, but nearly a total stranger, is uncomfortable in that sense. It's not something that any of us look forward to. But the good thing is now that WHO has done a systemic review of all cervical cancer around the world. And with the knowledge that we have about HPV now, they've realized that we don't need to do pap smears as regularly or as often as we expected that we had to before. Before, it was as soon as you were sexually active, within 3 years, do your pap smears, do one every year, and then do it every 3 to 5 years. Now WHO actually states, don't even bother doing a pap smear before the age of 30. Start doing pap smears after the age of 30. At least, you know, do it at least once between the ages of 30 and 49, but then do it regular from that point onwards. So do it according to local guidelines. You do it every 3 to 5 years. And that should be sufficient enough to find cervical cancer at an early stage. So guidelines have changed a lot. So for women, you know, who feel that, oh, you know, I have to do this every single year, it might not necessarily be true anymore. And you need to talk to your doctor about it.
Age of 30, you were saying, provided you're sexually active or regardless?
Oh, no, provided you're sexually active.
Okay. And, you know, Genevieve, it's been so many years now. 6 years, you said?
6 years.
Six years on so much more that we know about cervical cancer. You've been doing this advocacy work. What sort of drives you to want to do this?
because honestly, if I didn't know about it, it means that nobody knows about it. I mean, I come from my dad's a gynecologist. It's so ironic. And I remember going through my chemo and my radiation, and I turned around and I said, right, if I come out of this, I'm going to do something because people need to know. And quite honestly, I'd prefer to go for a pap smear every day of my life than have to go through what I went through. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, okay, a pap smear is a little bit uncomfortable. It's a little bit humiliating. But, you know, it'll save your life. And I got to say, I would still do one every year. And I'd rather, just to be on the safe side. And it takes, what, less than five minutes?
Yes, absolutely. I do one every year. Yeah. regardless, I think everyone should do it. When you had a radical hysterectomy, after which, what was that journey like? So that surgery, after which you went through chemotherapy as well?
Yes, I came out of surgery, and it took about 10 days later they give you the results. And I remember going to the hospital, and I said to my husband, what happens if it's not okay? And he said, it'll be fine. And they were like, no, I'm sorry, it's spread. It's gone through the nodes and everything. So that's when I don't know anything about chemotherapy. And to me, it's a death sentence. Mm-hmm. But what I found out, it's not a death sentence. You can actually go through it. And yes, it is horrendous. It's really horrendous. And I didn't lose my hair, so that was a positive. I was very worried about that. And I was ill a lot. My daughter used to hold my hair back when I was sick, and I kept saying, just take her away. No 4-year-old should see their mother like this. But I found that radiation was worse because that actually burns the skin. So if it burns the skin on the outside, the inside is raw. And those, your symptoms continue probably for the rest of your life. And it's just horrible. And then you have internal radiation, which was 40 hours of lying with radioactive rods inside me, not being able to move or eat or drink. And then it's over. And then you're like, oh God, I can go back to normal life again.
How long did that take?
In this country, it only took me 6 months because I believe the medical system is so good that it just moves. And, I mean, it could also help that my father's a doctor, but...
Of course.
Yes.
Always help that you have a doctor in the family. Yes. But, and that's the exact reason how you've described chemotherapy and the whole process. 6 months, yes. Well, that's the deterrent as to why a lot of Malaysians opt to consider alternative therapy, for an example. So how would you convince Malaysians that, you know what, you just got to bear with this for a while, but after that, it's okay? Would you say that?
Yes, I would. It's really, really tough. I'm not going to lie. It is really tough. But from what I've seen in the last few years, medicine's got so much, it's just developed so much more. So my mum had cancer maybe 2 years ago, and hers was a lot easier than what I went through. So her chemo drugs were so much better, and she seemed to get through it a lot better than I did. So I just think that maybe the drugs that they have now are easier. So I would always say to Malaysians, you've got to do it. Your family needs you. You've got to be there for your family. So do what you can to be there.
Dr. Sandri, have we come a long way as far as chemo drugs are concerned?
I think definitely we have. I think, for bad news, we all seem to have elephantine memories. We can remember what our makciks told us, our grandmothers, our grandparents. We can remember what happened 50 years ago in terms of bad news. And that's what we hold to us when people talk about chemotherapy. You say, yes, my grandmother had this, and look at what they had to go through, et cetera, et cetera. Chemotherapy, in terms of treatment, is actually a fairly new treatment. It only started in the 1960s, so you're looking at about 50 years, and how much we've evolved in the last even 5-10 years is more than what we evolved in the first 40 years. So as Jen said, a lot of the chemotherapeutic drugs now, the side effects are much less, and they have better drugs now to help you cope with those side effects as well. So that journey becomes a lot easier for specific cancers, especially compared to other cancers, though. So yes, treatment has evolved a lot, and we have to recognize that. I think chemotherapy, if you want to put it that way, some of us still remember phones where we didn't have hand phones in this world. And, you know, we relied on fixed phones. And now you look at the technology which comes with hand phones. And that's the same with chemotherapy as well. The technology for chemotherapy has become so much more targeted now. We know now that there are specific chemotherapies which can be used for specific people. You might both say that you have cervical cancer, but someone might be treated differently from another woman would be treated differently from you, because we know, you know, slightly more about the molecular structures,
so you're talking about the markers. Personalized medicine.
Exactly. And we're evolving that way with chemotherapy. So I do say, you know, do give it a chance. And as Jen says, it's 6 months. Yes, it is 6 months of hell, but it's 6 months that you can get through. If you put your heart, mind, soul, and you have support around you, you can get through it. So it is important for women to realize that there are more people now living after a cancer diagnosis than dying of a cancer diagnosis. So don't give up that chance to live because you're fearful. And for those who are the caregivers or your decision makers, as decision makers, we want to protect. You know, we want to protect the people that we love. And we feel that we are protecting the people we love by not causing any harm to them, perceived harm. And that includes chemotherapy or radiotherapy, because we're so fearful about it. That you lose sight of the end result of going through those treatments, and that is life. So yes, we might have to go through a little bit of harm. We might have to go through a horrendous journey, agreed. But there is life after that, and we should never, ever lose sight of the outcomes.
And Jen is a walking example.
Yep.
We're discussing cervical cancer with Genevieve Sambi, who's a cervical cancer survivor, and Dr. Sandri Somasundaram, president of the National Cancer Society. If you have a question for either one of them, text 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
Brilliant financial model. BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. It's our Health and Living segment, and January happens to be Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, and we've done two shows so far. The first one focusing on HPV vaccine, the human papillomavirus, which causes cervical cancer, some of the strains. And today we have Dr. Sandri Somasundaram, president of the National Cancer Society, in the studio with us, together with cervical cancer survivor Genevieve Sambi, sharing her journey thus far. It's been 6 years. You've been cancer-free, Genevieve. How do you still have to go for checkups all the time? You know, or is it something that you don't really have to worry about? And is it life is normal as it can be?
Life is as normal as it can be. It's never something that is far from your mind, and you will always need to go for a checkup. But what happens is that as the years go on, you have to go less frequently. So I used to have to go every 3 months, and now it's every 6 months. So I've just been recently.
Well done.
It takes a lot of courage, actually, to go
for those checkups.
It does, because it's always at the back of your mind. What do I do if it comes back? But I feel that people need to know that with cervical cancer, it's not a taboo subject anymore. You know, 10 years ago, everybody didn't want to talk about breast cancer because they felt that was, you know, taboo and you can't talk about that. But now look at breast cancer. It's massive. Everybody yeah. does awareness programs and everything. We try so hard with cervical cancer to try and build awareness, and people are still like, oh, I can't talk about that. You know, oh, we don't want to talk about that. Don't want to, otherwise my mum will know, or, oh, you can't, you know, it's that area. And I've had very rude comments. I've had news journalists just say really horrible things to me. And it's like, well, no, it's the ignorance of journalists and, you know, so on that make people believe that, you know, this is a bad taboo area. And, no, you know, if you've got it, that means you deserve it. And no, there is, it's a preventable and a treatable disease. And people need to know that. And all it is just to go for your pap smear. And because it is a treatable one, you can get through it.
Yeah. It's treatable, and now even we have a vaccine for it, Dr.
Exactly.
Salvia. I mean, we've come a long way as far as this particular cancer is concerned.
I think in terms of cervical cancer, people have to realize that it is caused by the most common virus known to mankind. So anybody who is sexually active,
male or female,
can be exposed to the virus. And any woman who is sexually active is at risk of developing cervical cancer from the virus. So there should not be any taboo associated with it at all in that sense. Because, you know, for the majority of adults, we are sexually active. And so our risk is there. So that we need to be aware of it. We need to be proactive about the steps we take to find out what our risk is by doing your pap smears or doing your HPV testing and taking the steps to stop it from happening. And I think that is the strongest message that you can give anybody, that it is a common cancer. And the risk factor associated with cervical cancer is a common risk factor. You know, we talk about tobacco and lung disease. But there's no stigma associated with smoking. Well, not in Malaysia in any sense. But there's such a stigma associated with talking about HPV and sexually transmitted viruses when they shouldn't be, because it's as common as the common cold.
I think this is one of the few cancers that we know what actually causes it.
Exactly.
It's a virus.
Yep.
It's a virus, and we now have a vaccine that could possibly... do you foresee numbers coming down, cervical cancer cases coming down, when we have finished maybe 10 years of this national immunization program? Do you think to do a sort of a study after that? And do you foresee that numbers would come down?
Definitely. Maybe not after 10 years. I think they look at closer to 20 years of vaccination to see the numbers coming down. Because you need that exposure of 10 to 15 years to the vaccine. To the HPV before you see the development of cancer. But definitely, this is the biggest breakthrough of last century when you talk about cancer, having a cervical cancer, vaccine. It is, I would say, the biggest breakthrough when you talk about cancer as a whole. And yes, with the vaccine and with the adoption by more and more countries, you could actually look at eradicating cervical cancer. And where on earth has anybody ever said that we could eradicate a cancer? But it could happen with cervical cancer.
Mm-hmm. Jen, how did you deal with the whole idea of cost? We just had a study recently that was revealed where it showed that after 1 year, a lot of cancer patients in Malaysia face financial difficulties. Did you think, cost was a factor for you?
Yes, I think cost is a factor. I'm not going to lie, it is expensive. Insurance does cover, but I don't think it covers the full thing. And for us, I'm lucky that my parents helped me to get through it. So for me, it was, we were able to get through it. But there are a lot of families who find it difficult to get through it. But I'm not saying that I went to any of the big hospitals or anything. I still had my surgery at the University Hospital. I still believe they're the best doctors there. This care was wonderful. And I just think it's something that you have to do. And there are people who can care for you, and there are ways to raise money, and
I think in terms of cervical cancer, the key is to find it early enough. If you actually find it early enough in precancerous stages, then you don't actually need to have an operation done. It's just by laser or burning that area off that you can actually limit your risk to developing cervical cancer. in very early stages of cervical cancer as well, treatment is generally just by surgery. So finding it early makes a difference in terms of the cost, definitely. But if you go through the chemotherapy and the radiotherapy, yes, you know, cost for treatment, if you do it privately, can be incredibly high. Whilst if you went through the government service, then yes, you know, cost is fairly much absorbed. But that is only cost of treatment that we're talking about. There's, of course, you know, financial costs can be weighed by different methods, whether or not you keep on working, whether you lose your job in that sense, even the cost to the family in terms of having to ferry you up and down, a lot of people take complementary therapies in Malaysia as well, so there's augmented costs in that sense. And if you go down the alternative path, a lot of people think that alternative medicine is better in terms of side effects compared to conventional chemotherapy and radiotherapy. But the cost of alternative therapies can be even higher than that of radiotherapy and chemotherapy as well. So there are hidden costs everywhere in terms of cancer treatment. So specifically to cervical cancer, you can find it early. We know that. You can treat it before it becomes cancer, or you can treat it at early stages of cancer with the minimal amount of treatment. So that's what we should be aiming for. Our awareness should be aimed at changing behavior of Malaysian women in terms of being more proactive in going for their checkups and going for their pap smears. Our awareness should be more proactive to men to make them realize that they are part of the equation as well, not just as a carrier of the virus, but also as an influencer of a loved one, of the woman in their family, that this is a cancer that can be found early, can be treated, and that you can live through. So give the woman the opportunity to do so. So make decisions not just from, I suppose, you know, make the decisions not just from a subjective point of view, but from a logical point of view. Look at the pros and cons, you know. Weigh up the facts and just not do it from fear, but do it knowing that there are people, you know, Jen's just one of thousands who are out there, who have gone through the journey and who have survived it and come up the other end stronger or, you know, equally as strong as before the journey. And I think that's important to see. It's important for people to know.
What's your outlook in life now, Jen? A lot of us take life for granted, honestly.
I try not to get stressed out by little things. I can hear my husband laughing about that right now. But little things don't affect me as much as they used to. I think I'm a bit more relaxed. Again, he's probably laughing. But, you know, a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more... I don't take things for granted. I live every day as, you know, this. I'm here. I'm able now to pick up my kids from school, to take them to school, to be there for them in the afternoons, and you know, I just try and be healthy. I try and be happy. It's all I can do because I don't know whether it's going to come back.
Sure. And your psychological state is very important, Dr. Sandri.
It is. It is, definitely. And I think, you know, Jen is underplaying how much influence she has out there in terms of the cervical cancer network, that her story inspires so many other people to actually do something and to be more proactive about it. And I think that's where the strength comes for many cancer survivors, that... if they have the right frame of mind, as you can see with Jen, that, you know, it's a positive frame of mind, that yes, there are negatives in your story, but you're able to turn those negatives into a positive frame of mind and realizing that there are better outcomes. It makes a whole lot of difference. It makes a whole lot of difference of how you tackle the disease, how you live the rest of your life as well. Because, as Jen said, you know, it's always in the back of her mind. She does, you know, live in that fear that whether it's going to come back, but it doesn't stop her from living. And I think that's incredibly important for everyone, is that you don't let the specter of cancer overtake everything else in your life. You realize that, yes, it is always going to be a part of your life. You know, it's always going to be there in some form or another, psychologically. I'm not talking about physically that, you know, the cancer is definitely going to come, but, you know, psychologically or emotionally, your life has been changed by cancer, but it can be in a positive manner, and just not in a negative manner. And from Jen's story, you can see that, you know, she had all the support around her. And I think that's incredibly important as well. And that's what I see in the society. That's what I see with the support group that we have and the women. They grow from each other. You know, they honestly get so much strength from each other. And it pushes them to higher levels in the things that they're willing to try, the things that they do, and all the activities that they do. So it is an experience. I know I keep using the word positive, but it's true, though. I mean, I think it can be a positive experience, but it really depends on what your outlook is, and how you're willing, you know, how much are you willing to give of yourself to fight this disease.
Jen, you talk to a lot of ladies in the country. What are they fearing most when it comes to cervical cancer?
They fear going for the pap smear, mm-hmm. and then they fear what the results are going to be.
They'd
rather not know. They'd rather not know. They'd rather not go as well for a pap smear, because then they always come back with, oh, but then my mum will know that I've been sexually active. And I'm like, I'm sure your mum would rather you're alive than, you know, not. But that is, from what I can see, it's the biggest fear. And also it's that, oh, it's not going to happen to me, so I don't need to worry about it. But this is where I always say, on paper, I was the last person who should have got cervical cancer. I don't smoke. I drink in moderation. I have two young kids. I've been married since I was 20. I exercise. I eat healthily. And I went for my pap smears every year. And I was the one who got cancer. So believe me, I was the one who thought, hey, it's not going to happen to me. But if it can happen to me, it can happen to you.
What do you say to someone who's afraid, Dr. Soundary, who's uncertain or who has reservations about doing a pap smear?
Talk to someone who has one, or even talk to your doctor about it. You know, I think keeping those fears inside of you just causes inaction. It just mulls and becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. You need to talk about it. You need to talk to someone about it. And if you can't talk to your doctor about it, you know, talk to us. You know, we're quite happy to if you're you can pick up the phone and, you know, call the National Cancer Society, and, you know, we can talk you through it. I think in terms of doing a pap smear, it's the fear and it's the humiliation, I suppose, as Jen said, which stops you most from anything else. It's not the pain or anything else. It's that idea of, you know, opening your legs up to a stranger, which is the humiliation. And we shouldn't look at it that way. You should look at it as a positive move that you know, you are helping yourself keep healthy. In that sense, we're so willing to do so many things for beauty, which to me can be as equally embarrassing in that sense. but we're not willing to do the same things yes. for health.
It's weird, isn't it?
It is.
It really is. Question from Munyandi. He's asking, would you have statistics, Dr. Soundary, on survival rates after chemotherapy and radiation?
It really, really depends on the stage of which you get the cervical cancer. Now, as I said, if you have early stages of cervical cancer, you don't need the radiation and the chemotherapy. But in terms of cervical cancer survival rates, I don't have statistics from Malaysia itself because we don't have survival rate statistics in Malaysia. But if you're looking at women who have done who are basically stage three onwards in terms of cervical cancer, you're looking at about 60% survival rate. So you're looking at 60% who will get over 5 years of survival.
Do you see that improving with the vaccine and with more and more awareness?
Oh, definitely. I mean, in terms of the vaccine, that's going to impact on the number of people getting cervical cancer. But what will impact more in terms of the survival from cervical cancer is actually doing your pap smears, finding it early, and then doing treatment appropriately. A lot of women find out that they have cancer. I'm just not talking about cervical cancer. I'm just talking generally about cancer. A lot of women or men find out that they have cancer, and they'll wait, you know, 2 to 3 months before they make a decision on whether they want to go on to do treatment or not. And that 2 to 3 months could be vital in terms of your survival rate. So it's actually doing treatment as soon as possible as well from the point of diagnosis. Don't mull about it too long.
What's your stand on traditional medicine? I love the doctors when I ask them that question.
I love your reaction. My stand is I don't believe in... I was brought up with conventional treatment. My mother, who's a cancer survivor, 5 times, went through conventional treatment. And she got out the other side very well. She's 86 years old now. I suppose, you know, everyone has their own beliefs. But what I would say is that be as vigorous in choosing in choosing traditional medicine as you would conventional therapy, meaning that all the questions that you ask of conventional therapies, you should also ask of traditional treatments or alternative therapies, and then make your decision. Don't make it from a point of lack of knowledge, if you want to put it. You know, don't make it from a point of emotional status of, oh, you know, tradition is better than conventional because it's got less side effects. And that's why most people take traditional treatment. It's because they're afraid of the side effects of conventional treatment. Be as vigorous in the analysis of both treatments. And when you have knowledge of both treatments, then make your decision. And if you go for traditional treatment, then we will, you know, support you in that sense. I'll be very clear, you know, the National Cancer Society of Malaysia, in terms of our support network, whether you do traditional treatment or whether you do conventional treatment, you are equally of need of support and that we will be there for you. Yes, if you come to us in terms of questions of what sort of treatment you should have, then yes, we would advocate doing conventional treatment. But in terms of support, every single person who has cancer needs support. And we would not question. We would not, you know, turn you aside based on the type of treatment that you've advocated to take. A cancer journey cannot be done alone. And a cancer journey is just not treatment of the cancer. There's so many aspects to a cancer journey. Whether it's emotional, whether it's your mental well-being, whether it's physical, spiritual, there's so many different aspects for you and the people who care for you as well. And it's important that you get the support for all those aspects as well, and not just the treatment of a cancer.
Your message, Genevieve, this Cervical Cancer Awareness Month.
Ladies, go for your pap smears. If it could happen to me, it could happen to you. And pap smear takes less than 5 minutes, and it could save your life.
Dr. Salary?
I think it's exactly what Jen said. You know, be aware, but more than being aware is be proactive. get your pap smears done.
Thank you both very much for joining me today. Genevieve Sambi, a cervical cancer survivor, and Dr. Soundari Somasundaram, President of the National Cancer Society, speaking to us this Cervical Cancer Awareness Month on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.